Blog Talk Radio.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.
Thank you. Thank you for everyone for coming out this evening. Odin's quest for wisdom is never ending, and he is willing to pay any price for the understanding of life's mysteries. He craves more than anything else. On one occasion, he hung himself. On another one, he wounded himself. On another one, he fasted from food and drink for 9 days in order to discover the runes. On another occasion, he ventured to Mimir's well, which is surely none other than the well of Urd, amongst the roots of the great world tree. Our guest this evening on Spiritual Insight with Darren Bouquer is Stephanie, who's a priestess of a Satru tradition. Darren will be discussing the path and taking calls for readings. Join us in our circle. We'll be back in just a moment. Spiritual Insight with your host, Darren Bouquer. I'm Daniel Michael, the founder, co-creator of the Main Street Universe Radio Network. I want to remind everyone that Main Street Universe is, in fact, a network of 6 shows. This one, Sundays, 7 p.m., Spiritual Insight with your host, Darren Bouquer. And then on Mondays is Science of Light at 10 p.m. with your host, Mr. Randy Goldberg. Then on Tuesdays, we have Master Herbalist Miss Susan Weed with her show Green Magic, Green Medicine at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Then on Wednesdays, the flagship show, the one that started it all, Main Street Universe. Myself and co-founder, co-creator, Mr. Kevin Baird started that show about 3 years ago now. Now it's myself and associate producer Janice R. White, and occasionally Brett Hillman adds an interfaith balance, as he is an Episcopal minister in training, as well as some other sort of Christian deacon, and passing out flyers at people's front doors or whatever he does. But our good friend Brett joins us occasionally. And then we have on Thursdays Miss Queen Mother Imaku and her show Uwat Dau, Kemetic African Tradition. Lots of great stuff, original language prayers, and some people forget that Egypt is in fact in Africa. So listen to Queen Mother Imaku and learn all sorts of things in 1 hour. Then on Fridays we have Mr. Kevin Baird with his show Walking on the Sidewalk, A Horizon Oracle's Journey, and Kevin is the founder, co-creator of the Horizon Oracle, as well as an artist and many other things. And Kevin can be found at www.templegaia.com. And later that Friday evening is Nichols George with her show Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. 12 Midnight, Jesse is the author of 4 books, Activating Compassion, and a companion workbook, as well as You, Me, Life, Dreams, and Its Companion Workbook. So tune in. Those are the shows making up the Main Street Universe Radio Network, and there's more on the way. Darren is in the chat room, in the queue, I mean. I'm going to go ahead and turn his microphone on. Darren is a reader at the Willow's House of Voodoo, in the magical city of New Orleans. It's spinning. There it goes, finally. Hello, Darren.
Hello. Welcome, everyone, to Spiritual Insight this wonderful Sunday with Darren Boucaire. How are you this evening, Daniel Michael?
I'm doing well, working on numerous things, always. And your microphone was spinning there for a second, which sometimes happened with the technology here. That's why I was stumbling for a bit. It's like you turn on, here we go, and all of a sudden it's spin, and doesn't come in. But anyway, doing well, writing a book, working with the band, and setting up some gigs. So made some great contacts recently and have a lot of things going on.
Mm-hmm. Abundant energy is always positive. Speaking of abundant energy, we're very blessed to have Stephanie from wonderful Asa True Kindred, local to you in that area, and who is going to share a little bit about being Asa True and what that means and you know, just kind of some elements of that whole belief and, you know, how to further those ideologies and just what it's all about in a modern setting in Western paganism in the modern age, so polytheism. So we're going to kind of talk a little bit about that. You know a bit about Asa True, right, Daniel Michael?
Okay. Yes, and the great Norse pantheon, mm-hmm. with all its mm-hmm. great stories with Loki and Odin and Thor, mm-hmm. and the wisdom of the trickster, you know, oftentimes mm-hmm. it tends to be part of the lesson of Loki, right, who's the controversial mm-hmm. one. But sometimes the gods need his help because he's clever, you know, and he can get things done. Mm-hmm. Might not be the way they want.
Well, there's a lot of tricky moments from Odin himself. Even Thor has moments of fooling, and not normally, but you see a lot of tricky moments from a lot of the gods and a lot of the iconic figures, especially the giants were quite tricky and illusory. But I don't know. So let's go ahead and bring her on and kind of get that conversation started.
All right. And your mic is on. Welcome, Stephanie, to Spiritual Insight with Darren Boucaire.
Well, I'm glad to be part of your conversation tonight. Thank you for asking me.
Oh, sure. It's our pleasure to have you. You're an amazing resource, and, you know, it'd be great. Kind of, I always love to bring up Asa True and you know, some of my belief systems into the show. But it'd be great to kind of have someone else to kind of flesh out some of the ideas about it and that sort of thing.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, it would be helpful because I could go on for hours about this. So if you wanted to get me started by asking a specific question, then...
Of course. Yeah, me too. So we're going to... maybe I'll let Daniel Michael, just being the fact that we're both very, you know, immersed in the energy of this sort of thing, what could Stephanie maybe flesh out for you, Daniel Michael, if you have a question?
Okay.
Did you have anything in mind to kind of... Yeah, okay. Because I have quite a few. And then just to let everyone know, too, please call in for reading or just if you have a quick question, we are open to, you know, sharing with you this evening. And, you know, maybe Stephanie might have some insight to kind of add as well. So just, you know, feel free to call in or message us in the chat room.
My first either question or just request for a comment would be how a lot of people don't know that many of the very days of the week that we live in this time structure, are based on the Norse mythology, such as Freya's Day, Woden's Day, and I'm wondering if you can comment on that a little bit.
Okay. I can't give you the historical background as to exactly when it happened, but it's absolutely true. Sunday as soon as day. Monday is Manny's Day, which is that's where the man in the moon came from. Unlike many of the other pantheons around the world, in the Norse pantheon, Suna is a sun goddess, and that to me is kind of cool. Tuesday.
Right, instead of moon goddess, right?
Manny is a man, the man
yeah.
in the moon. Yeah.
Yeah, that's quite the juxtaposition, isn't it? Of
yeah,
a lot of
yeah,
other belief systems.
Yeah. And, of course, Tuesday is Tears Day, and Wednesday is Wotan's Day, and Thursday is Thor's Day. Friday is Frigga's Day. Saturday is kind of the odd man out in that that was held over from Roman times for the name of Saturnalia. So
I always try to scoot Loki into that just because.
Yeah.
Just because the word Satur is in there anyway, you know.
Yeah. Satur, Satur.
Yeah.
Right, like Pan. So I just, but
yeah.
I know it's kind of a toss up on that one.
Yeah.
So
I can talk a little bit about how I got started with all of this and
sure.
what resources I used, if that would be helpful.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Okay. I used several resources. One of the best resources I know, if anybody's interested in learning about how to construct a kindred, for example, or a group, there's a book out there that was developed by a gentleman by the name of Lewis Stead, called Ravenbach. And he was one of the members of Raven Kindred North. And he has some really interesting stuff in there from the Hammerite, some bloats, a typical day of getting ready for what it's like when you got a bunch of people coming over to your house for a bloat. And there's a lot of insight in that in terms of what's involved when you're running a kindred and if you're going to have a bloat at your house or in some place. And I'll talk about that in a little while. The Denali Institute of Northern Traditions, Runes by Ragnar is the website. And that gentleman has a 7-year-long course on the runes. And it's very well thought out. And
7 years.
Seven years. 7 years. Every month for 7 years, you get
That's
a new
wild.
Packet of information. And he does monthly meditations. And
mm-hmm.
it's an amazing, amazing course. And it's pretty
mm-hmm.
reasonable.
Now, 7 years, and he gives you a packet every month, so we're not talking about just the Elder Futhark. We're talking about
no
giant, expansive, good
we
gravy.
We are talking,
wow.
yes, absolutely. And he's classically trained. He's a classically trained magician, which, like Freya Aswin, for example,
mm-hmm.
he puts a lot of thought and insight into the work that he does.
Mm-hmm.
And because the runes are not just used for divination, it's a magical system, and it's kind of cool, but it's very intricate, and it's like if you're going to study tarot, for example, it's not something you learn to do overnight. I mean, you can have a lot of, I guess, personal insights and innate knowledge, but it really helps if you know a little bit about, you know, the system and everything, so... those two things
can I,
really...
I don't
sure.
know if you agree, but I learn more about runes magic every day or any time
oh,
that
yeah.
I use it. You know, I mean, it just, I'm always learning, you know.
Well,
so.
Yeah, I'm always learning. And I guess the other thing, too, is that let's take the first rune, for example. I'm not going to go through the entire Triettes, but Fehu, for example. And, you know, the way that I learned the runes initially is the way you would teach a child, and it's like you give them one word. And so for me, Fehu was cattle, and then it also means wealth. Okay, well, I live in the city, so I could kind of understand that cattle and wealth kind of equal things, but it wasn't until I went to Sweden and I was driving down these long, windy back roads across these green fields that were covered with cattle in these little tiny houses with just lots and lots of cattle that I totally understood what Fehu meant. And to me, it was one of those aha moments that I had to kind of put myself into a cultural context of how all that really made sense. And,
yeah, small house,
yeah,
small homestead, and
right.
giant pasture of cattle. Like that,
yep.
that really fleshes it out for you.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does.
Mm-hmm. And you can read it in the Northern Mysteries, and like I did with the explanation
yeah.
of Fehu,
mm-hmm.
is like, yes, the aurochs and the cattle were,
yeah.
they meant well. But you, unless you're saying being immersed in that visually
yeah.
and being there in that energy is just so transformative. So it's,
oh, it is. It really, really is. And it's not to say that, you know, the 7 years of study that I did and all the meditations that I did, because I actually worked on one rune a month and did
okay.
that, you know, numbers of times and just really immersed myself in each rune. And so, yeah, you do get lots of things. You know, if you open yourself
mm-hmm.
up to the collective unconscious and to the multiverse, you're going to get a lot of insights and a lot of information, but it really helps, too, to kind of have a context for it.
Now,
yeah.
I had heard,
mm-hmm.
my next question is, and you talked about the Fehu, and
mm-hmm.
I know this is Darren's interview more than mine, but this one was curious to me because it is the one rune necklace I own, though it usually just hangs
mm-hmm.
on my wall here. And my question is, I've heard people say that originally the runes were not for divination, but for spell casting and things. I'm curious if you comment on that, or if you've heard that, or if you disagree.
Well, I think that's absolutely true. If you look in the Havamal, there's an entire part of it that talks about, you know, the runes, and there's numerous translations of the rune poem in several different languages. There's a Norwegian one, there's an Icelandic mm-hmm. one, there's a German one. And so absolutely, it is about the magic.
Well, what was your question? Was that the only gateway into the magic was through Fehu?
My
or?
Question was, I had heard it wasn't originally for divination like it's used now. Now
oh,
they use it as
therefore,
like a
well, you
card.
Give a really nice, beautiful rendition of you know, what the ideology behind Odin's sacrifice and the Well of Mimir and all that. But
mm-hmm.
I'm saying, yeah, I mean, they're for divination and they're for poetry and they're for magic. I mean, it is the most... I work with two major magic systems for manifestation. And I have been talked to for certain people in the entertainment industry who want a clear vision of who I am or what I do and I simply have to work with my Teutonic magic system because it's just quite simply the most linear and powerful
mm-hmm.
outside of the Afro-Caribbean magic system that I work
yeah.
with. So there's no way I'm not going to work with it. I do all the time, and I've taught
yeah.
people that work at Marie Laveau's and friends of mine the runic magic, and they're amazed that it's so simplistically poignant. Because you link right into it. And if you know the runes and you learn the runes, then you can utilize them magically. I mean, it's just, it gets right to the point. I don't know.
Yeah, they get right to the point, and they're very literal in a lot of ways. They're very good at helping you find things. And if I lose something in the house, I'll draw three runes. And it'll take me probably 30 minutes of sitting there and thinking about it. But eventually... it will all come together. I lost my cell phone one time, and the runes that I drew were
oh yeah, I want to hear this.
Fehu, Kenaz,
mm-hmm.
and I can't remember what the third one was, but it was basically it was about under a work light, and
right. What are you doing to get money? And Kenaz
yep.
being the light in the darkness.
Yep,
so,
yep. And it was sitting on a desk under
mm-hmm.
a light. But the way it was sitting, we couldn't see it. So
amazing.
You know, it's kind of cool how the runes work. And you know, I think with a lot of magical systems, you know, it's all about bending our will. But one of the things that I've learned is that there is a codependent relationship between me and the runes when I'm doing runic magic, because that's just the way they work. I can't explain it in any other way.
I can understand, but that's, again, I'm, you know, I've done a short, kind of an introduction or instructional on runic magic. I taught it at Sticks and Stones in the area, and I mean, it just, you're working with very, very extremely powerful elemental forces, and it gets right to the point. I think there's, God, I hate to use this word because it sounds so, like, obnoxious, but falderal and detritus and just BS.
Mm-hmm.
With a lot of other disciplines, and you know, whereas the runes just take you right to the epicenter of the power.
Yeah, I think that's very true. Yeah, they do that, and I really like working with them. You know, one of the other things that a lot of people don't know about is that in addition to drawing out the runes, you can do something called a rune galder, where you can combine the runes in certain ways and echo those sounds. Freya Aswin, in her early books, used to have a CD in the back that had her doing the runes. And it's a very, very powerful way to have that vibration of each of the runes, because each one of them has a different vibration, and it'll make your whole body vibrate as you're saying them.
Bless her soul, because I'm so glad. That's one of the best money I've ever spent on a New Age book was her, I think it's Northern Mysteries or something, but it was the one with the CD in the back that taught me how to entwine the runes, and then I think... When was it? I think it was like 98 when I really spent a lot of time with it. And it just, it's like mantras for the Vedas. I mean, it's the same thing. It's the same premise.
It definitely is.
Tonally will rip you asunder or bring every part of you back together. I mean, it has that power. And listening to her and Tone Hagalaz, anyone that is familiar with the runes, well, if you don't understand what the supernatural or what esoteric sciences can do, listen to this woman and tone this part of it, and it's unbelievable.
I had that CD in my car one time, and I had to take my car into like a dealership to have it worked on at a garage. And they had unhooked my speakers because they had to get up underneath my vehicle. So they went to turn everything back on again, and the CD came on with Freya Aswin screaming, "Hagalaz! Hagalaz!" And people dropped their equipment. It was like, you know, it scared the stuff out of them. It really did. It's scary.
Yeah, I totally agree. Oh, my goodness. But that's, you know what she taught, you know, listening to her, you know how to really get in and intone the runes, which is beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we have a caller. I thought we might take the caller and just see what.
Okay. They weren't with the button that said they were interested, meaning that it didn't have the question mark. But we'll go ahead and ask them. Okay.
Oh, they didn't have a question?
I don't know yet. 760.
Oh, okay. Well, let's ask them.
760, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
Doing well. We were
good.
Curious.
Thank
if you
for calling Spiritual Insight. What's your name?
Arlene,
okay. Do you have a question for Stephanie or I about Scandinavian mysticism or... Anything in that realm, or do you have a question about?
You know what?
Your life?
I had just started kind of, so I'm trying to get pregnant, and I had just started using some of the runes to carve on my candles, and I kind of want to know, is that because we're like my tradition, we carve the candles, so I wasn't sure if that was appropriate or.
Oh, you can absolutely do that. You know, because part of the rune poem is to know how to carve them. And
okay.
So if you understand how to work with a candle and how to dress a candle and you're going to carve the runes in it, that is perfectly acceptable.
Okay. Okay, good. I'm glad to see I'm on the right track because I've been having a little bit of a difficulty. And I'm
now,
kind of
carving the right one is important. That's definitely
okay.
Like, you know, so would you say Barcana or what would you say?
What combination?
What combination are you using or are you thinking about using? Maybe that's the best place to start. Is what did you think was going to work for yourself?
So and you know, I don't even know the names, but there was some, I had been reading a book my girlfriend gave me, and then looking online, and there were two in specific that I was using, and one was to actually get pregnant, and the other was for, like, a safe pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I would immerse yourself in what those two are. And learn about them if you're going to carve them and do candle magic with them. And it doesn't, you don't have to take 7 years, you know, but you can
take a good
hour and read a little chapter in a nice, you know, book and just learn about, okay, this is what it means and this is what it is, you know, and then kind of immerse yourself in that. What would you recommend stuff for
Well, in addition to Burcano, I would also use Kenaz. Looks like an open C, but it's like a half of a diamond shape. And, you know, so part of what you're doing is you want to create opening. You know, a welcoming. Another one to think of might be Legus. Legus is the rune that is straight up and down, and then up at the top on the from left to right, it slants down a little bit, and that's water. So, you know, it's
like
all about
like a water birth almost. The
exactly.
Legos.
Exactly, You know, that having things flow because, you know, there's a lot of mechanical woman stuff that happens, and, you know, our bodies are wonderful things, and at the same time, you definitely want to be in that headspace, so I think Legus would also be good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If I could add anything, too, do you have, is the father involved in the situation?
He is not involved in the situation as such, so, like, we've been trying for kind of a long time. I don't know that he would be open to that. He's pretty strictly Catholic.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh no, I mean, is he involved in the birth and the life of the child?
Oh, right. Yeah, we've been trying, and it's actually been really hard for me. I've been having to do some medical.
I keep getting this rune to tell you about, so I wanted to at least make sure that you were at least involved with him. But
yes,
I want to mention Jera. Jera looks like two people kind of in juxtapose with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like two J's facing each other, and it's about two people and their communal energy recycling and interacting with each other. And it's great union, and it's about the spiral of two people's lives intertwining. And if you want to pull him into what's going on with you and the baby more, that would certainly wouldn't be a bad idea.
Okay, that would be perfect, actually, because I do kind of leave him out of a lot of it because I feel like it's my problem. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I don't want to take the guy's standpoint, but you girls do that a lot. So, you guys are pretty tough. You handle it all on your own. So we can contribute.
Yeah, one of the things that I'm getting
you can do stuff.
Is that if you haven't had your thyroid checked, there could be some things going on, you know, just in terms of where your body temperature is. And I'm not talking about your basal body temperature. I'm talking about what your temperature is. And it really needs to be at, like, I want to say around 98 and higher than that. Your hands have to be warm and your feet have to be warm. And if those things aren't happening for you, find a doctor that will talk to you about what's going on. A lot of doctors want to treat you according to your lab results rather than your body
right.
temperature. So
okay.
That's definitely
I've been working pretty strictly with a fertility specialist, and I don't know if that's a typical yeah. test, but I can ask about it. I have an appointment on Friday.
Yeah. Fertility doctors I don't have that much experience with, but if you Google fertility plus body temperature, you know, having a what your body temperature needs to be and thyroid issues, a lot of conception problems, believe it or not, have to do with your body temperature.
Okay.
I'm concurring with that a little bit. I just picked a card, and I got the Five of Pentacles, which relates to wanting to be a little bit more comfortable than you are, you know, either financially or physically. So as I picked it as she was talking. So I'm going to say that maybe due to certain elements in your day-to-day life or whatever, you could be a little bit more comfortable, which would apply to your body temperature. I did get the Strength card, which means that this is a totally handle, you know, you can handle the situation very easily with building certain amounts of physical stamina or comfort at home. It may be minimizing stress.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Perfect. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling in. And I think you're being wonderfully proactive about all this, so I wouldn't really be too concerned about anything, you know. So.
Because I am, so maybe part of it is my anxiety. Maybe I need to manage that better.
Yeah, it's anxiety is having some detrimental, you know, some trickle-down effects. So just try to remember that if I can impart anything to you, is that it should be fine. You're being wonderfully proactive about this, where some women just barrel along doing whatever they want to do while they're pregnant. So it's going to turn out fine.
Perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for calling Spiritual Insight. Turning the mic off now. Okay.
Well, that was interesting. So you definitely had a feeling about the body temperature?
Oh, yeah. I definitely did. I definitely did. I mean, when I was sitting there just thinking about her dressing the candle and the runes and stuff, I'm going, you know, ask her about her body temperature.
I just kept getting Jera, and I'm like, well, how does that apply? You know, so I don't know. I mean, you know, and I know how it would apply, but I'm like, so I was hoping that she had some sort of contact with the father, so that we're just kind of helped out. So I wanted to, I guess one of the things that I thought would be good to just flesh out, and of course people have no idea what the distinction, and or have never even heard the word outside of the, you know, the Webster's Dictionary of the word heathen. And the adopted, you know, moniker by Asa True or, you know, northern pagans of the word heathen. So, and what the difference between someone who would be, you know, standard Wicca or Gardnerian or, you know, you know, and what the difference would be. So,
well, let me start by kind of giving just a flat out overview of just like Christianity, where, for example, you have Catholics and you have Protestants, and within Protestants, you're going to have Baptists and Methodists and Lutherans and everything else. We're all pagan. If you're not Christian, you're not Jewish, you're not Muslim, and you're something, you're probably pagan. Pagans who worship the northern gods will either say that they're heathen or they'll say that they're Asa True. I can only speak for myself and for the people in my group, because everybody defines themselves however they define themselves. So this is just how Stephanie defines heathens and what it means to her. It may not mean the same thing for somebody else. We use the word heathen to differentiate ourselves against folks who might say that they're Asa True and who may be part of some group, not to say that people who are Asa True are all part of these groups, but are part of groups that may for some reason feel that you have to be from a certain part of the world or, you know, have a certain skin color in order to worship the northern gods. So we don't believe that in our group, and we fly what is called the Heathens Against Hate flag. And the Heathens Against Hate flag came about in part because there were some people who wanted to say that unless you came from a part of the world, that you should not be worshiping the gods from that part of the world. Our group does not believe that, and so that's why we say that we're heathen, and it's as simple as that. How heathenry is different than Wiccans, for example, the Wiccans can be of a lot of different flavors. Some can be solitary, some can be part of covens, some can be part of, I guess, secret covens, but they believe mainly in a god and a goddess. They believe in the four directions, and they believe in as above and so below. Heathens and Asatru, on the other hand, believe that there are nine worlds and that we're not attached so much to the Lord and Lady, although there are some people that pick a god and a goddess within the Northern Pantheon, and those are the only ones that they worship. We tend to kind of, depending on what month it is and where we are just with our lives, we may pick, you know, several gods or several goddesses or one god and goddess to work with at different times. In terms of how we do our magical circles, if you want to call it that, in a Wiccan circle, you have to spurge your circle. You're going to do it with water. You're going to do it with salt. You're going to do it with air. You're going to do it with fire. Heathens who put up a circle, and not all of us do, generally use the runes. Also, we have people who are Norse pagans, and Norse pagans, in my mind, is someone who is not necessarily heathen or Asatru, but is perhaps Wiccan and is interested in using the northern gods and some elements of the northern myths in order to facilitate how they're worshiping during the Wheel of the Year for them. And I think one of the other things that's very different is that although heathenry is a recreated religion such as Gerald Gardner's form of Wicca or Alexander's form of Wicca, we have the lore meaning we have the Eddas, we have the Havamal, we have history and a very, very rich tapestry of stories from the sagas that we can pull from. So I think, to me, those are what I would see as the major differences.
I would like to mention Snorri Sturluson as a as a resource for people that want to really learn where the whole ideology behind worshiping the Aesir and just that whole feel.
Yeah, he is a definite hero. He was actually assassinated shortly after he finished translating some of the works from the Old Norse language into something that was more modern. He definitely felt that there was just a fine cultural history of stories that was going to get lost.
He's a hero. Can you imagine what would have happened if he didn't do it?
Oh, I know. Seriously.
What would we have right now? We would have nothing.
Right, right. So he's definitely it's definitely a good thing. It's just very, very sad that you know, so many other cultures have lost so much just because of acculturation and whatnot. And I think one of the other things I want to talk about is profession and how a profession of faith within Asatru or within heathenry is in some ways similar to what a person would go through as part of their initiatory experience, either as part of a coven or between them and their gods. And in our group, there are some groups where everybody has to be professed heathen or you can't worship with them. We're not one of those kinds of groups. You don't have to be professed heathen to worship with us. And I think that that's one of the things that's a little bit different about heathenry as opposed to some of these other groups.
Is the openness, and I can attest to the, you know, Stephanie's kindred, some of the most wonderfully open and you know, some of the presentations and classes that they have with the group is, you know, they're all over the board, you know, that there's a lot of learning about different religions and, you know, polytheism and all sorts of stuff. So that's really fantastic. Now, what can I ask a question, you know, because this would be for any person that knows the, okay, like I even gave a tutorial on circle openings for, mm-hmm. you know, standard pagans that were just interested the other day.
Right.
Okay. So for the listeners and stuff, when you say opening a circle or a lot of times when I'm doing, like if I'm doing something that's very Asa-oriented, I would use Ingu's or the diamond shape. Instead mm-hmm. of, let's say, a circle, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what other runic elements are we looking for when we're looking at, like, if you're translating that into the four elements?
Okay, well, legumes
would
be water.
Or would you use the
full,
the first eight to do it?
We use the entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
We do all of the runes, and, mm-hmm. You know, we start in the north, and we start with Fehu. And
mm-hmm.
we end with Othala. Depending on how many people we have,
mm-hmm.
We might separate it into three ets and have different people each do an et. And some people do it better than others. And, you know, we're not going for perfection. We're going for
right.
for people feeling like they're being included. And, you know, sometimes they don't pronounce the runes exactly right, but... what we're looking for within our rituals and within our bloats is for people to feel that they've connected with community and that they've connected with their gods and that they've connected with their ancestors, because that's one of the rounds that we do every month, is that we connect with the ancestors. And we're very liberal with how we identify ancestors. Some groups, unless somebody has passed over, they're not considered an ancestor. In our group, if you miss somebody and it's, you know, a child of your heart and they're on the other side of the country and you have to be thinking about them, then it's okay to mention them during the ancestor round, you know, because it's about connecting with family. So.
And that's interesting, too, because...
Mm-hmm.
On the Afro-Caribbean side of my spectrum, they're very particular about having an ancestor altar and
mm-hmm.
that whole thing, too. In respecting the hereditary or the, you know, the genetic connection to people that have passed on, but given the fact that I feel so connected to certain past lives and things like that, that I'm not quite as particular about, say, all my expansive, you know, like that's part of my whole cosmology, but I think that
right. That
what you've connected with, say, in other lives or and that sort of thing can be incorporated as well. Or,
well, you know. I think you're absolutely right, because, you know, you have not only your ancestral stream, your DNA strand, you know, that goes
mm-hmm.
from who you are right now as far back as when cells started dividing. But who's to say that all of your past lives you were actually in that DNA strand, or if you were in another strand of DNA somewhere else, you know? So it gets quite complicated and quite busy.
It does get complicated. One of the things and why for the longest times I picked up I don't know if I've ever told you this, but I picked up, like, Diolores, Norse Gods and Giants when I was in second grade.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like I just, like, walked into, like home in my own energy. I was like, mm-hmm. that's in second grade in a Catholic school with surrounded mm-hmm. by nuns who were like, you know, I took it home and it didn't go back to the library at the Catholic school. You know what I mean? And it felt like home for me. And then every time I've done like a past life regression or a visualization that it deals with past lives, that person that I'm regressing will see a specific person that my energy becomes, or they'll just see me change into someone who's a lot taller and a lot blonder than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And considering I don't have any hair, that's quite the transformation.
Mm-hmm.
So when more than 10 people have seen this happen, it's a pretty poignant thing, you
mm-hmm.
know? So to me, that was part of the fact that when I do dig into ancestors and dig into energies that are connected to who I am and what's going on, that is certainly part of what I've connected with personally.
Right.
So that's part of my belief system.
So I think one of the other things that separates heathenry from Wicca, for
mm-hmm.
example, is that in many, many covens, the high priestess will have they'll do the calling down of the moon onto the high priestess, and
mm-hmm.
you know, she will then speak to the group. And sometimes,
mm-hmm.
depending on if they'll also have the calling down of the god onto the high priest, and
mm-hmm.
everybody else in that, you know, is kind of in a supporting role. In heathenry, we have a form of divination that's called oracular saze. And in that particular venue, while the group does help one of the people within that group to see for the people in very much the same way that the high priestess sees in a coven, it's not usually restricted to one person, as it is in a coven for, like, the high priestess only. In our particular group, for example, everyone has an opportunity to learn how to do oracular saves once they've been in the group for a certain amount of time, and at least has an opportunity to sit on the high seat one time. There are people that have done it who've said, glad I did it, don't ever want to do it again. And that's fine. So there's a lot of different things within heathenry, or at least within our group, where we try to be, allow people to have opportunities to do things that they may not do in other groups and other traditions.
And would you say that reflects, and I know between Danish and Norse and Swedish, and there's all sorts
mm-hmm.
of different sorts of social dynamics, but do you think that reflects, you know, with, for lack of a better word, because most people just connect with the word Viking
mm-hmm.
community, would you think that
yeah.
reflects how there was a level playing field, and you had kings and in certain, and, you know, but for the most part, do you think that reflects a sense of community that a lot of...
Well, I think that, you know, just having gone to the Danish Museum, and then when they had the Viking exhibit here
mm-hmm.
at the Smithsonian like a dozen years ago, and even in the literature, you know, they talk about there's this one woman who goes from village to village and how she's dressed and how she's treated and what she does, and it's only that one woman. And so...
Well, who does that woman represent, do you think?
I think that woman represents Freya, quite honestly. Or it's like Freya.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You know, but,
wow.
you know, it's
mm-hmm.
actually, you know, in fact, they just uncovered here very recently a burial of a woman that had a lot of the accoutrements of being a saved woman. And I think that living in that part of the world and surviving is a 24-hour job. And
right.
everybody had to do what they had to do in order to bring in the grain and, you know, mm-hmm. take care of the cattle and to put food away and to do whatever. So there wasn't the luxury that we have in our day where, you know, you can have more than one person who can do oracular save. I guess where I'm going with all this is that we
because I kind of had an add-on question of that. But
Yeah, but I guess where I'm going with all of that is that the point of our group is to it's like we want to teach people. We want to give people opportunities to explore different things. And if I'm doing all of it, or if my husband is doing all of it, or somebody else is doing all of it, then not everybody feels like they're really participating and they're contributing. And so we really try very hard to lift people up and to give them the magical confidence to go out and live, you know, amazing lives. And so, you know, that's kind of why we do it.
Well, I got to say that I learned that very, maybe about 8 years ago or so, that at some point you have to be comfortable with the fact that you're passing on knowledge to other people, and you can't be covetous of what you know and what how you know your connection to spirit is, because if you're going to hoard that knowledge, then you become this sort of, I mean, you can be that sort of a spiritual worker if you want,
mm-hmm.
but I think that that's not why we're here as, you know, as people. I mean, I like to share, if I'm in any sort of given, like, situation where there's learning involved, I want to learn from those people, and I want to learn them for me, and, you know, if they're in the same business I am, if they're other manifestors or workers, I want them to be able to learn what I know, because at the end of the day, I don't think I'm losing anything by that. And I love that
mm-hmm.
that your kindred feels the same way. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I guess that's what I'm saying, is it's about shared power as opposed to amassing power. You know, there's so much to do, and it's just great that each and every person feels like they can pick up and they can do things.
I don't feel like you ever lose anything by doing that.
Mm-mm,
what about
I
you,
don't
Daniel,
either.
Michael?
I agree.
Daniel,
I think that sharing is part of the experience. In fact, I do attend a Unitarian church, and one of the things that's often said is that God is, because, you know, Unitarians hate God all the time,
mm-hmm.
one of the theories being that God is our shared experience. That's what the divine actually is, our interaction with each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's true. I think that is a very true statement.
There's just so much to learn and to know, and I think that you can constantly expand into so many different areas. Even like Stephanie said, runically, there's so much to know. And, you know, look at this 7-year course that Ragnar
mm-hmm.
teaches. It's like, so really hoarding any sort of really encapsulated ideology about what you know and being very covetous about it just seems like a just ridiculous idea to me.
Oh, yeah, I think so. And mm-hmm. I think also, too, that with our group, you know, we've had people that have been with us for 10 years, and my plan is at some point I'm going to retire, and I don't want what we've worked so hard for to stop because I'm not in an active role anymore. And if I'm not growing the next generation, and if I'm not teaching them that it's okay to share power, and I'm not teaching them how to grow other people and how to mentor other people, then it'll stop.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're close to the 8 o'clock hour, Darren, which means
uh-huh.
we have just about a half hour left. I know it flew by pretty quick. It's been a great conversation. I just wanted to maybe take a brief break, get everybody a chance to catch their breath with a brief song, and then come right back to our discussion.
Okay. Sounds good. You okay with that, Scott? Okay,
I'm fine.
Okay. And this song is from someone who has been on our show, Kellyanna, the musician.
And the song is Mother Love Me.
Mother, help me. Mother, heal me. Please release me from all things worldly that do not serve me. Mother, love me. Mother, help me. Mother, heal me. Please release me from all things worldly that do not serve me. Mother, love me.
Within these stones I feel the power. I am reborn as I break these chains that bind. And now I'm floating light as a feather as I break.
Forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.
All right, everybody. If you can hear the master there.
Yep.
We are back.
All right.
So, welcome back, Stephanie. Welcome back, Darren. Both your mics are on.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Stephanie, thank you again for, you know, sharing your expansive knowledge of heathenism and Asatru. So, again, we appreciate having you on the show. Another thing I wanted to kind of, going back to what you're talking about the woman who was traveling to different villages and communities, do you think that she was doing shamanic healing, or was she doing rites, and or was she
being
the
lore,
icon of Freya, yeah, in a sense? Was she being like an avatar of Freya?
I don't know for sure if she was an avatar of Freya, but I can tell you that she was called to villages when there was famine to try to make sense of what was going on in terms of should they stay where they are, should they go?
Mm-hmm.
Was there something that they could do, you know, in an interaction with the gods to make things better? If there was illness, was there something they could do to fix it? So it's almost as if she was the arbitrator between the people and the gods in terms of helping them to make sense of things that they weren't able to make sense of. She also helped to resolve disputes if there hadn't been an all thing and there really wasn't a clear line of, you know, who was telling the truth and who was lying. And so that was some of the things that she probably did.
Yeah, I think that just having that aspect of the divine feminine and the Freya
mm-hmm.
in general, just as a
mm-hmm.
presence, I think us just even mentioning it, I wanted to communicate how important that was to communities and how important Freya was in the cosmology of the Aesir and the Vanir and that whole
mm-hmm.
thing. It's just so downplayed by the Christians that recorded
mm-hmm.
everything about
yep.
the, you know, the pantheon, that I just wanted to definitely communicate that on the air, that Freya was immensely, like, a huge figure. So I was just kind of interested in what your ideas were about that finding and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think that I know that when I'm on the high seat that I feel extremely close to Freya, and in fact Freya is the one who taught this to Odin. So you know, it's definitely woman's magic.
Right. I mean, I respect it as such. I mean, I really do. And as close as I feel to the idea of the Allfather and what he did, there's something immensely mammoth in when I get into the divine feminine of it and what
mm-hmm.
that represents. And it just seems just huge. You're really tapping
mm-hmm.
the source on that level. So
right.
Mm-hmm. It's really powerful. Were you aware of that, Daniel Michael, of Freya's importance in the whole?
I was aware.
Daniel.
Sorry, I was having a microphone issue. I was aware,
okay.
Not specifically what she was mentioning, the person representing, but I was aware, I think, more of the Celtic Bridget or saint, you know, became the sainted Bree. And she was kind of a blue-collar goddess and very important in the pre-Christian world to the point where she was adopted as a Catholic saint. So that was one divine feminine figure that I was very familiar with. And Freya, I understood some of the things Freya was about, but the story she just told was actually new to me, so I found that fascinating.
Now, Steph, I think that to take the idea of her in the stories that revolved around her,
mm-hmm.
I think that it's hard to translate that into a Christian context. So
mm-hmm.
I think that that's where they decided, oh, we're just going to cut out this anything about this. Because
right.
here we have a strong woman who, Queen of the Valkyries, is inundated with magic and powerful magic, and languages and all this stuff, and is completely at home with her sexuality and does whatever she wants in that respect as well.
Oh, yeah,
so how
yes,
do we,
she does.
So
and
how
also
do we
right,
that
part.
In a Christian ideology? And you can't. You just can't.
And
well,
is it Freya
know,
also associated with beer, I thought, in some way? I thought she was part beer goddess in some way. But anyway, I could be wrong.
Is there any validity to that, Stephanie?
But,
sure.
Since we brew mead and, you know, we're all about the mead, I don't know that much about beer from that perspective as to whether or not Freya would have had an affinity for beer.
Freya Hall and Holda are more beer, right?
Yeah, so Freya Holda. Yeah. But my husband is the one to talk to about Freya Holda because that's a Germanic, you know, from Germany, you know, Germanic.
Yeah, maybe that was the mistake I made.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And
my first mistake in here ever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that was it.
Yeah.
So, what are there any challenges for people that are as the true that or heathen that you find when everyone goes to like say gatherings and things like that of a large nature? Are the people that are involved in, you know, heathen groups and things, do they feel ousted from a lot of the standard as above, so below set, or what, I mean?
Well, I, you know, having been to Heathen All Things, which would be a pagan gathering of just heathens,
mm-hmm.
and having
mm-hmm.
Gone to a major festival every summer,
mm-hmm.
that has all different kinds of people in it. I think that there are some differences between the two cultures. If you go to an all heathen festival, there's not going to be a lot of nudity.
Mm-hmm.
And if there is nudity, it's in a specific context. So clothing optional is just not something they're comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the other things is that at regular festivals, like at huge festivals,
mm-hmm.
heathens understand their own way of doing things, and they're very comfortable with that. I know that when I first started out, I was actually Wiccan before I became heathen. And when I went to one of my first heathen events, I was, you know, questioned closely, like, what are you doing here? And you know that we don't wave our thamis around, and we don't do this, and we don't do that. And, you know, we're not into magic, so I don't want you, you know, thinking that we're, you know, going to be having magic here. You know, so I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. But that was just that one group. I think
they
that...
They basically said, they're like, I don't want you thinking there's going to be magic here.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, why would I think that at a okay.
Yeah,
at a gathering,
yeah, because,
or an all... Was it an all
right.
thing, actually?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Wow, all right. Then what was the focal point of that one? I'm just curious. Just getting together?
I guess it's like everyone that's in a group has the honor of their group in mind and how they act within a heathen
uh-huh.
group. And if you go to a heathen group and there's a lot of drinking at one of these things and somebody messes up and is just, you know, totally misbehaving themselves, they belong to somebody, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So their kindred, their kinsman, their kinswoman is going to pick them up by the seat of their pants and drag them home.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to another type of festival where you've got lots of different people there, there's not going to be that culture of people being responsible for their kinsmen necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if somebody messes up, it's like, well, you're on your own, dude. So
I think what we're definitely getting, and of course I know this, and you know I know this, but for the audience and,
mm-hmm.
and for other people listening, the sense of community is a big deal to the modern day heathen,
mm-hmm.
right?
Honor is huge. Your word is your word. You know, we have, you know, the nine noble virtues and many groups live by the nine noble virtues. Our group lives by tribal values, but, you know, it's mostly the same thing, is that, you know, you have honor, you have hospitality, and I don't think necessarily, you know, if you look at all the stuff that people in some groups have to copy as, you know, part of their Wiccan coven, you have like all these laws. And it's very different. It's a different way of looking at the world.
Well, it's one that I definitely can relate to,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to,
yeah.
to some of the really odd hierarchy that certain Wiccan and other practices kind of really relate
yeah.
to. Especially the idea of the nine worlds and the nine,
yeah.
you know, I mean, that just really is more expansive than
yeah.
than just the kind of the
well,
bi-level
focus. Well, I guess in another context, if you go to a heathen, when we've gone to heathen festivals, they don't normally have security because everybody knows everybody and everybody's watching out for everybody. And they practice something called frith. And if you are in a situation, you can be at a place where you can't stand this other person, and you've had, you know, words with them. You could be in the process of having like a legal battle with them. But while you're in that particular situation, you practice frith. You carry on a rational, quote unquote, friendly but chilly conversation with them. You eat at the same table, and you try to make nice and be polite. And that's something that you don't see in other contexts and other quote-unquote pagan events.
Yeah, which is a shame.
Mm-hmm.
I would hope that wouldn't be the case. And unfortunately,
yeah.
even though I'm immersed in, you know, mysticism, and I work as a spiritual advisor worker, all that, I have not really partaken in a lot of giant festivals or anything like that. So
mm-hmm.
a lot of this, when I I've talked to Stephanie about these before, I just happen to know, you know, any time I've heard the word skyclad was in reference to something, someone telling me a story. I've never
mm-hmm.
actually experienced people skycladding all over the place or anything like that. Like, I'm just,
yeah.
I just haven't.
Yeah, but see, the thing is that in a clothing optional situation, it's just like, hey, you know, people have clothes on and people don't have clothes on. It's not an invitation for anything other than the fact that somebody is walking around with no clothes on. And it's just that in heathen environments, you know, at least at the festivals that I've been to or the things that I've been to that are all heathen, they just don't do that. So.
And I think I could maybe... And I am like the farthest thing from a prudish person
mm-hmm.
than you would ever
yeah.
see, believe me. But I would still probably relate a little bit more to what you describe as a thought process at a heathen gathering or an halving
mm-hmm.
than
mm-hmm.
the like random like woo skyclad like yeah like you know. Random person just kind of rolling up on me, wants me to show me like their artwork or whatever, or rolling
yeah,
up skyclad.
Yeah, well,
like,
sunglasses are your friend, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, it might just be, and yeah, so I don't
in more ways
know,
than
how
what.
Do you feel,
if you want to look,
how
right?
do you feel about that, Daniel Michael? I mean, you've been
you
say
sunglasses are your
right?
friend in both ways, when you don't want to look and when you do.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, you're uncomfortable on one end, and then you're comfortable on the other end. So it just,
yeah,
yeah. I don't know. What's your take on it, Daniel Michael? Like, have you been to some giant festivals and stuff? Or?
Not the giant ones, but I have been part of small groups that did skyclad thing before. It was a funny thing because it was when I was very much a beginner, and you have to
mm-hmm.
understand that my life as at the time and still now in some ways. As a musician, you know, and I used to party a lot, and I had been to, like, sex parties and all that, so I wasn't really that interested in that. But this particular group I was with, I didn't feel like I was learning anything metaphysical. They would just get together, get naked, and it would become a bunch of sex at some point. And I would just go, well, gosh, I'm not learning anything. I mean, it's like a party and all
well,
that.
Well, you might have learned something.
I learned a few things.
You learned something about the earth and reproduction. Yeah, I don't know. That's
yeah,
not,
but I didn't feel like I was learning like the metaphysical lessons I wanted to learn.
Right.
I might have learned other things
yeah.
like that. Maybe a judge goes to a meeting like this, and I wasn't aware of that. One guy was a local judge, I think another one was like some kind of police officer or something. So I learned that some people in authority go to meetings like this.
Well,
it's a very strange thing.
I think he
invited me back to it after a show. I was, you know, like I said, as a musician. And I walk in there and, hey, there's a bunch of naked people running around. And then they mentioned their interest in the occult. And so I didn't learn much from them as far as the occult interests.
I've been solitary, and I've had my little mini coven with one or so people over the years. So I didn't really go to a lot of giant group events. But I really like the thought that there's some sort of structure or there's something going on. Because if it's just the scene from like The Wicker Man, the original movie, then it's just you know, where it, I mean, not the end, but like just random. Just stuff, then maybe that's not what I, you know.
It's also about what you're looking for, right? Are you looking for a very liberating experience? Then moments like that can be, I guess, very beautiful and brilliant. I think maybe when you're really studying and want to be advanced as a practitioner or dedicated, as Stephanie said, like these are kinships, and they're like, wait a minute, we have values here, we have a thing, and we have a code, and we have a code of conduct, and we look out for each other. So I think it changes then. It becomes a little more serious and not just that liberation of, I'm out in nature, look at me.
I think
you know,
can have fun, too, without, I don't know.
It's just a different, I think, what you want, I guess, is how I might say it.
Maybe that's the little boy that went to Catholic school in me that's like, if you're there for a sense of the divine, then maybe you're just not flailing around like, you know, you're not, you're taking it seriously on some level. And that's what I love about polytheism is that the worship of the old gods is about the divine can still be a little bit of a drunken, relaxing time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Right? Which is beautiful.
Exactly. That's part of the beauty of the whole experience. So I understand why people desire that sense of liberation that she's talking about with the clothing optional. And I also understand the people that feel like, okay, well, I just want to, you know, I just want to deepen my studies now. Okay, I don't really need that stuff going on anymore.
Yeah. So, for example, you know, if it was, you know, being naked with a purpose, meaning if they were doing sauna together, you know, I think that in that context they'd be perfectly okay with it. But you know, running around with no clothes on, with no purpose, just didn't make any sense to them.
That's exactly. So. I agree with that too. Yeah, if you're naked with if it's ritual, if it's something, then so there's that. And I understand the fun aspect of it, and you know, and if that's, I guess that's not something that I would be as interested in. And of course, maybe I'm becoming that curmudgeonly older person. I can't imagine that I am, but I mean. You know, and maybe because it is my business, too, that I just take it very seriously and that sort of thing.
Yeah. So, well, you know, it's so hard to carry on a conversation with somebody and have a serious conversation if the other person is naked and you are fully clothed. It's just,
so
you know,
true,
the juxtaposition is, you know, it's a little awkward.
I could imagine, you know, and that other person may be just really trying to convey something really important, and it's just like, okay, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think, and then I'll end my comment on this with this. It was put very nicely to me one time, though, in a much more respectable context of the nudity, when somebody said, you're naked like the trees and the rocks, you just don't have any other ego stuff going on top of anything more than a tree or a rock or the earth would have. And so I would say, like you said, for purpose and very purposeful ritual, that I can see like the beauty in that.
I see the beauty in it too. I think that I'm thinking of the most outrageous sense of the connotation, you know, where people are just very.
Oh yeah, yeah, and then there could be kids running
around,
somebody worried about, you know, liabilities.
Yeah, maybe that.
Or then you get into the modern day stuff, right? Like, wait a minute. But we do have a caller, folks.
Okay. Well, I guess take the caller before we're running out of time here.
Yeah, we have about 11 minutes left, so let's go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
770, welcome. You're on the air with Darren Bouquet, and it rhymes.
Yes, it does rhyme. Okay. It does rhyme. Good evening, people. My name is Avaj, and I'm just calling to see what kind of messages Cosmic Intelligence has for me through you good folk.
Oh, beautiful. Okay. All right. So, and your name is Avaj?
No, Avaj. V like victory,
Avaj.
A like angel.
Oh, okay.
Like
all right. Avaj. All right, sure. All right, what, let's see. Okay. There's a little fear of, there's a fear of being happy and knowing that there's no longer fear. There's a fear of no fear because you don't know how to exist in that space where you're completely at ease and you have crested the mountains of difficult, arduous problems, and having crossed over that mountain range, and now you're in the place of sun and enlightenment and peace and owning that space. Now, I'm actually using a Scandinavian tarot deck. It's actually Welsh, but it incorporates that. So I'm getting the sun card inverted, and I actually saw that too, that you're coming to a point of where the warm energy is going to be. You're going to be really drenched in that, and it may seem uncomfortable because you're waiting for the other shoe to drop. So I'm here to tell you that you're coming to that promised land, you're coming to that peaceful place, and your sun, however, is inverted, okay? So with this sun card, we're actually seeing the rune, Sowulo, as the lightning bolt or the really impactive power of victory when you're really claiming it, of having overcome adversity. So what your lesson for you to embrace and to know is that you're finally edging away from that being immersed in adversity.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And then I don't know if Stephanie had anything to share or to add to that. Or if it's totally contrary, that's fine too. I don't know.
No. I think that it was very poignant what you said, that a lot of times you fight so long to get to a certain place and you're so used to being in that defensive position that it's very, very difficult to let go of that and to just relax and to take that deep breath and to breathe. And so what I was hearing in all of that is about breathing and embracing this new part of your life and just relaxing and let it happen.
Okay.
And I guess maybe if I can add anything to that too is sometimes the challenge is to fill up your life with activities and events and happiness and joyous moments that will replicate more joyous moments. If we're not used to doing that and we're used to filling up time with problem solving, then those problem solving moments are going to continue to replicate themselves. Meaning, if you don't have any issues, then you're going to go out and find issues to solve, which may be for other people, or you may pull more energy into your life that may cause issues. So I'm saying don't do either of those and fill up time that will bring joy. Fill up your time with elements that will bring joy. And even if they seem frivolous to you, you know what? That frivolous, that's what might bring joy. So I'm going to say do that.
Certainly. Thank you both all very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for calling in.
And her microphone is off.
Oh, I did want to mention that if anyone wants to get a hold of me for a private consultation, of course, you can get a hold of me at D-B-U-C-A-R-E, dbucare@gmail.com for a private consultation. Or, of course, you can call the store at Marie Laveau's on Bourbon Street in New Orleans. You can find
the
times for my schedule on their website as well.
That's right, one of the more well-known stores of its type in the world, really, Marie Laveau's.
We do have a wonderful cachet and a wonderful reputation, and some of my colleagues that work there are just some of the most amazing readers that you'll ever run into. So there's a reason why our staff doesn't change. There's a reason why I came back after years in D.C. after Katrina and came back is because, you know, that's that cachet really, you know, you have to live up to the cachet, and then you have to, you know, produce. And that's what we do when we go to work is really give quality insight to people. So that's good.
Yeah, and it's one of those ones that's been around a while. Another one I can think of is one
years.
Of the oldest.
35 years?
Yeah. There's one in Chicago, the old occult store in Chicago that's been around for like 100 years or something like that. There's only a few of those stores that keep surviving and surviving and surviving, and Murillo's is one of them. The one you're at is one of them. You know, stays around.
Stephanie, is there anything that in just some parting ideas for people that are interested in maybe, you know, kind of approaching the heathen path or the true path? You know, anything that that you'd like to recommend?
Yeah,
or?
I think that. Each person has a unique way of looking at the world. And the gods, unlike other pantheons, the gods are your friends. And just be open and, you know, just ask for guidance and just be open to things. You know, there's a lot of really good books out there now. The internet is a wonderful place to find information. Look at different kindreds if you're interested in talking to people that are near you, and you know, try to go to some bloats or to some stumbles or to some things, and just put yourself out there and ask a lot of questions. Heathens are very opinionated, and you're going to find people that. Go from one end of the spectrum to the other. There's some that haven't read any of the lore or anything and say, no, I just talk to the gods, and I'm perfectly comfortable with that. And there's other people that really, really want to immerse themselves in the lore and want to understand every single thing. And you have to find out what works for you and just be open. And, you know, that's kind of the way I started was, just, I asked the gods to show me the way, and they did.
I think that that's, if I can say what is the most important thing in any path is your relationship with the gods or the divinity that you're approaching, any path, okay? So if, you know, whatever it is, your relationship with the divine is the most important thing. Okay, it's not. Now, what's great is the social connectivity and the sense of community and all that, but you got to make sure that that front and center is your relationship with the divine. Because if you're there to hang out with some sky-clad people and, like, or you, it, you know, your motivations, you've got to, and some people, that's where they get involved in the path, and that's fine, but you have to make sure that that front and center is the relationship with the divine. So I totally agree with that.
All right.
You know, you might have gotten involved for other reasons, but you need to proceed with the path and work that in on some level. And I can say that it's, you know, being involved in Asa True and being involved as a heathen is a great way to learn a very direct line of manifesting and a wonderful way of divination and obviously a wonderful way to get involved in the community as well. So thank you, Stephanie, for being part of Spiritual Insight this evening.
Well, my
pleasure. Maybe we can have you on again sometime, depending on what's going on. So.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks again.
And bye-bye. Thank you all.
Bye.
All right, Darren, we're coming down to it, so I want to remind everybody real quick, Darren, how can they contact you?
You can get a hold of me for a private consultation at dbu C-A-R-E at gmail.com, or again at Marie Laveau's on Bourbon Street in New Orleans. You can look at their our website for my schedule and when I'll be available. Thanks again for tuning in to Spiritual Insight. This is Aaron Bouquet, and we will talk to you next week.
Absolutely. And Spiritual Insight is a show on the Main Street Universe Radio Network, the network reminding you that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined. Have a great evening.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.